Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 24th of February, Anno Domini 2018, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Jay Venright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Oh, and Dennis, we're delighted to have Dennis with us today. Steve is one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest.
Oh, at least one.
Or in the Southwest, I think, is where he is today.
Well, we'll have to wait for him to call in.
Yeah, exactly.
Give us an update.
Assuming that on top of a mesa somewhere, he can get a signal.
It's pretty sparse out there.
I almost said confined to phone, which just shows how old I am. All right.
You'll have to tell me about that during the break.
Yeah. Google is bringing its augmented reality system, ArcCore, out of beta with new features and is making its Lens visual search tool part of Google Photos on all phones. Google boasts that 100 million Android phones currently support the platform and is working with several companies to certify new ArcCore phones in the future. Lens was previously Pixel only, but now that it's available through Google Photos on Android and iOS 9 or later, or through Google Assistant on several Android flagship phones. It's also supposed to have improved support for recognizing common animal breeds and plant types.
Okay. No
phone on earth will recognize my dogs. None. One's a mongrel, the other was a mutt.
Okay. Well, so, maybe it will recognize them as that.
Yeah, maybe it will.
It'll just give you the shrug emoji.
Lens can examine photos you've already taken through Photos, and if you're using a Samsung, Huawei, LG, Motorola, Sony, and HMD Nokia flagship with Assistant, you can simply pull out your phone and point it at something. ArcCore launched as a limited preview in August of 2017, and Lens arrived shortly after in October. Google Lens Senior Director of Product, Aparna Chennapragada, describes them as two sides of the same coin. Lens is a camera in system that helps you make sense of the visual world. That is to say, it's what goes into the camera. And ArcCore is a camera out that makes the world appear differently through your phone. Lens is an extension of Google's text and voice search capabilities, and ArcCore lets developers easily build augmented reality apps similar to Apple's ArcKit for iOS. ArcKit recently added support for vertical planes and image recognition, and Google's own update could help raise the bar for both mobile AR platforms. We've seen things like ArcCore stickers from Google already. If you remember, there was a campaign when the last Star Wars movie came out,
right,
where you could take pictures of people and there would be Star Wars troopers and people
then put them
in the picture,
into the frame. Right.
Yeah. It's that. That's augmented reality. But now developers can upload their own ArcCore-based apps to the Play Store. Apps that already feature augmented reality capabilities can also integrate ArcCore tech for better performance. Google is also updating Android Studio to help developers preview AR apps on the desktop. For now, both Lens and ArcCore are relatively simple and limited. Even so, the next few weeks should see them become more sophisticated and more widely available. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Is Google is bringing augmented reality to all Android phones? And your choices are, wow. That'll be nice, I suppose. Big deal. And no idea why that's good. So far, we've got 43 votes, and big deal is in the lead, followed closely by no idea why that's good. And, of course, you know, I know you'll have more to say. So if you scroll down on the right, under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the first item under the poll discussion is not there. There it is. It's the second item. Somebody else posted in the first item. Okay. 24 February 18, Google is bringing augmented reality to all Android phones. So I know you'll have more to say on that. And when you're done with that, of course, you can give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free 1-800-790-0415. That number in Bayonne, 1-800-790-0415. Augmented reality has started to become a big deal. The ability to take a picture with things in it that aren't there.
Right.
The ability to play games in your home. They did that demo, again, of walkers from Star Wars, and they would come through the walls, and they would knock over tables and do all this stuff. And then when you took the glasses off, poof, your room was fine again, shockingly. But they happened in your environment. And now, of course, you can take a look at something, and if it has augmented reality, you'll see, like, somebody put out a set of Pokemon cards, essentially. Right. And if you look at them through the phone, there's a Charizard or whatever it happens to be standing on the card.
Right. Yep. And I think Nintendo had that for a while. If you want, if you have no idea what we're talking about, head over to the mall. Go over to the Lego store, and they have the ability for you to stand in front of a camera, in front of a small television, and you hold up the box of the particular Lego set, and what they have is an animated set of Lego that comes and assembles itself and performs a little skit in front of you on top of the box as you hold it. It's all very, very interesting to see, and I'm excited to see where it's going to end up. I can't wait for it to be used, for instance, in education. For instance, if you wanted to do a class on home repair, or if you wanted to give somebody tips about what to do next, being able to put this type of information in front of you and say, well, this thing rotates counterclockwise to be loosened, which is fairly normal, but this other part is clockwise, and it's going to point to it and put a little spiral arrow next to it and say it goes around this way.
Right. Or molecules.
Sure.
In chemistry class.
Right.
You can actually watch valences and see things interact. And,
that's right.
It's a fascinating idea. It's been used a lot with those virtual reality augmented reality headsets where you put on a big pair of glasses, but now it's coming down to the phone. And so you can actually have, there was another thing, I think it was an Apple ad where people put stickers on things. And then if you looked at the sticker, it would be something. I don't remember.
Okay, I'll have to try and track that down.
Yeah, it was something. Might not have been Apple, but that's the deal. And people are very excited about this because, let's be honest, it's a new cool toy. I don't think we need another reason, do we?
No, that's a good place to start.
It's a cool toy. And as time goes on, you should be able to find it having useful things, as Dennis said.
Well, so was GPS, right? GPS was a cool toy for the military.
Right.
Because they needed to locate things.
Right.
And then when it came down to the rest of us, now we have things like Garmin and other
boxes. The Microsoft Maps. I mean, that's what's on our tablets.
Right.
I mean, for getting around the whole day, that's all I use is Google Maps.
Right.
And it's pretty good. I mean, it's got its flaws here and there if we get into outlining areas.
Right.
And I still love it, you know. Because, I've tried other apps like Waze, and that Waze is far more accurate. Whereas Google, you know, the mapping system for Microsoft there, I could just turn on the street and it says, you have arrived.
Okay.
And I still got to go down six more houses.
Oh. Right.
It's, you know, it gets me there, you know, at least granted it finds me the location.
Right.
So for folks that are new to the city, you know, it's a great thing to use.
Sure, yep. Great place to start.
And also, of course, the civilian GPS is not as accurate as the military GPS.
Correct. Right, there's a few meters, right?
Right,
of accuracy
right.
Versus sub-meter.
Sub-meter, right.
Yeah.
And, of course, we're seeing Waze rage now.
Oh?
Yeah. What's happened is what Waze does, for those of you who have not used it, it's essentially crowdsourced driving tips. So, you know, people will say, oh, there's a cop here,
right.
Or there's potholes
accident,
here, or whatever,
backup.
Right, or a backup,
or
and so find an alternate route. So what's happening is that a lot of communities are finding that normally quiet side streets are suddenly filled with cars because Waze has said there's an accident or a blockage or something up ahead. So use an alternate route, and here it is.
People are being rerouted,
and they're angry about it. That's called Waze rage.
Okay.
And now they are putting
false accidents
reports
on your street at the end of your driveway so that nobody drives by.
Right, giant pothole in the middle of the street.
Oh, boy.
Police officer blocking, accident.
You can't just report yourself as a grump.
Right.
there's a grump that lives here. Stop driving by.
So Waze is now becoming less useful because people are gaming the system.
Right, yeah, they're fuzzing that data.
Right, in order to do the thing that they want and have the thing that they want. And it's actually kind of amusing and kind of sad. I know, you know, what's Google going to do about it, right? I mean, what can they do?
Yeah.
But there have been accidents, particularly in busy cities. San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
You know, New York, Detroit.
L.A., yeah.
L.A., where there's lots and lots of traffic. And there's an accident, it's going to route you around it, but it's going to route you through city streets because now you're off the expressways.
Right,
right.
Which means that you've now got traffic that is blocking an expressway. And you know that in rush hour in a place like Detroit or Los Angeles or San Francisco, it's bumper to bumper, 5 mile an hour on the throughway.
Right.
Now take all that traffic and put it on city streets.
It's worse.
Just Friday night. I mean, there was an accident on 590 northbound. And, of course, 490 was all jammed up. So, you know, somebody came across the radio and said that, you know, there was an accident. So I immediately went to Waze, popped it in, and it said, yeah, you don't want to go this way. Let's go this way. And it didn't.
And you and 200 other people all went through somebody's neighborhood.
But it was still faster than going the other way.
In Rochester, it would be. But in a place like Los Angeles or whatever.
Hang it up.
Well, and this is the places where they're angry. And so Boston and, you know.
Sure.
I've driven in Boston. They're not human. They're not normal people in Boston.
It's different. Using turn signals is a sign of weakness.
It's not only a sign of, but if your bumper is a millimeter ahead of mine, you own the road. And if you want to be in my lane, you will just go there.
Oh, yeah. No, I've experienced it.
I will never drive in Boston again. I do not. It was
you
not
know what's
pleasant.
Scaring me, though, lately? Is, you know, I'm literally on the road.
Spiders.
10 hours a day. But no, I've seen folks, now that the red light cameras are gone.
Oh, yeah.
People will anticipate that the light's going to change.
Yep.
And they're jumping the light.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've seen that a number of times. They just get impatient, and bam, they go right around us and right on through the red light, and it's like, whoa.
There are a couple of channels on YouTube that have dash cam footage.
Oh, sure.
And I used to think that every single human that drove in Russia was both drunk and high.
All four locos. But four locos in the cup holder and everybody in Russia. Just
right,
come
right,
with the
right.
car. There's a
they
trunk
also,
full
they
of
never,
it.
They have no tread on their tires. They don't, in the winter, they've got ball tires.
Right.
I assume that was Russia. But now it's you get the same footage, essentially, in the United States. People who just don't get that a red light means stop.
Right.
Or who think, well, the light's going to turn red eventually, so I can go now.
Yeah.
Well, who knows? With autonomous cars, it'll be, you know, you screw up, three strikes, you're out, and congratulations, now you have an autonomous car that is limited to, no, you know, 20 miles an hour.
I'm right.
You could go anywhere you want at 20 miles an hour, and it's going to stop at all the right things.
Right.
Or we'll give you a bus pass.
Granted, you know, they took down the cameras and that, and, you know, these folks, you know, still owe, what is it, over $7 million in fines that they're turning over to another company to collect on.
Right.
But I still think they were a good deterrent on most of the folks in major intersections like Lake and Ridge.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I used to go to work early in the morning, you thought that there was a fireworks display going on there because you come up to it and you'd see the cameras flashing like crazy on all the different corners because it was unbelievable.
It's a challenge. I'm not sure that the red light cameras were always done the right way, but I think they may have served as an effective deterrent.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Well, welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are the highly professional...
That's right.
...Soundbites. And we have Andy from Greece, New York on the line. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Hey, Nick. Before I get to my problems here, a quick aside. I received a very nice letter from Rob Linton this week.
Oh, nice.
Highlighting the upcoming fundraiser. And what I thought was nice about it, not only when he signed the letter, he had the signatures of you, Dave, and Steve Ray on the letter as well, which means he's paying attention that I'm a Soundbites listener.
Yep, yep, yep. He's doing a good job. We are for the rest of you. We are in fact coming up soon on another pledge drive. So please save your shekels. We'll need them.
That's right.
And Rob is doing a truly excellent job making sure that the. You know, if you're specifically pledging around Soundbites, you get a Soundbites-related letter. You're specifically one of the polka dots, you
right.
get a polka letter.
We're paying attention around here.
We're paying attention around here.
We appreciate
All right.
you.
Thanks, Andy. What's your question?
Okay. A few weeks ago, I had called and said that Windows was not recognizing my zone alarm. Well, now that they've gone through all the creators updates and all that other nonsense, all of a sudden, the little red light that was going on, or little red symbol that was going on with the shield, is now green. So somebody figured out that they need to recognize zone alarm.
Oh,
yay!
Yep, yep. Many people have complained that you know if you want to use Windows' own firewall, then everything works perfectly, and if you want to use a different firewall. That it does not work properly. Microsoft kept saying that was because they could only trust the program that they had written. Other people said, remember antitrust?
Yeah.
And suddenly everybody else's stuff worked again.
Yeah, remember the 90s?
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't... The message that comes up, it's green, and it says you have it, but you need to access it directly.
Okay.
Right, right. Oh, they can't access it for you. They can't.
If you want to work with it, you have to go out and recognize. You have to do it directly. You can't do it from inside their program.
Right, right. And that's fair because Zone Alarm isn't going to give them the keys to the kingdom.
Yeah. Okay. A couple weeks ago, I called and I was having trouble when I'd get done with a session and I want to shut down the computer and I'd hit the little window symbol in the bottom left to bring up the what I call the start menu so you could power down and nothing happens. You have to do a control alt delete, log off as a user, re-log back in, and then do it.
Right.
I've been doing it, I've noticed that I get when I can click it, and it opens. I shut down and do a control alt delete. It takes me right out, and I say shut it, log off this user, and boom, it's gone, and there's no hang up. When the problem is there, I get a blue screen with a message that says task host window. And it says /Microsoft/Windows/plug-and-play/device install reboot required. And that's always the message that comes up. Sometimes there's also a second one that says Cisco monitor, but sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not. But that device install reboot required is always there when this thing hangs up.
Yep.
And I'm not installing any devices.
What we seem to think is happening... And as you know, Microsoft is very, very good at telling us everything that goes on under the hood.
Oh, yeah. Just like Apple.
Just like Apple. So, yeah, the only people who are good at it are the Linux people because there's your source code.
Yeah,
there's not much
there's
hidden
the log
there.
File. There's the code.
Right. Right, 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 right. So, there is, well, okay. There is a section in settings under accounts, under sign-in options, There's a new function in the privacy section, which is called Use My Sign-In Info to automatically finish setting up my device after update or restart. Apparently, that's not working well. So if you turn it off, and ever since one of the latest updates, it's been defaulted to on. And it used to be off.
Hmm.
So now if you turn it off again, that doesn't happen anymore for most people.
Okay, so that was settings, accounts.
Sign-in options. In the privacy section.
Privacy settings, and then...
Use my sign-in info to automatically finish setting up my device after an update or restart.
Okay.
That used to be off. Now it defaults to on, so turn it off again, and you're back to the way you were, and it shouldn't be a problem. What's happening is that there is a host task, that is running in the background that's trying to set stuff up. The problem is there's nothing new to set up. So instead of saying, oh, nothing new to set up, I'm done.
Right.
It just keeps looking. And of course, when a host task, or as Microsoft calls it, a task host thing is running, Windows won't shut down. Because task hosts are more important than you.
It's like trying to go to sleep when you've got those thoughts running through your head all night.
That's right. That's right. Did I leave the stove on back in 1982?
Yeah.
And do I even have the key to that apartment anymore?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So what you need to do is just go to settings, accounts, sign-in options, privacy section, and turn off use my sign-in to automatically finish setting up my device after an update or restart. That should handle the problem, assuming that that is, in fact, your problem. That will handle it.
Oh, good, because I was thinking it was something a little more sinister than that. Somebody was exploiting the plug and play to try and install something. But
no. Never attribute to maliciousness what can be explained by Microsoft ineptitude.
There you go.
Okay. Last item. We are actually in the last weekend of the month, so Thursday is the first again.
Right.
So we will be having a Google's meeting over at St. John's Meadow and to discuss all things Google's. And sometimes we actually discuss things Windows and Android and all kinds of interesting things.
Yep.
Okay.
Everybody's welcome. It runs from 7 to 9. And hence my plug for the month.
There you go. Thanks, Andy.
That's great.
Thank you.
Yep. Bye-bye. Yeah, the Rochester Googles were having lots of fun at those meetings. People come with all kinds of questions about searching and about Chromebooks and about Android phones and about pretty much anything that has to do with Google.
Mm-hmm.
And we will do our best to answer them. Although, if you have an Android device you'd like help with, bring it.
Yes.
It's harder for us to help you when you don't bring the device you need help with.
Yes, so. And charge it first. That would probably be best.
Right, and charge it first. Exactly right. That'll help, too.
Cool. Do you get a lot of people to those meetings?
It depends on the month.
Okay.
During the snowy weather, not so much.
Right. Well, it's tough to get out.
Yeah. But during the nice weather, we can fill a room. It's a pretty good group.
Interesting. Okay, cool.
Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Elmer from Greece, New York. Hi, Elmer. What's up?
Hi, good afternoon.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
I have a Windows 10 computer that has a rather odd problem with one of the user accounts on it.
Yeah.
There's a total of three user accounts. Two of them, when you sign in or switch to user, the desktop and icons show up in less than 5 seconds. There's one that takes 5 to 10 minutes. It's been going on for probably about a week now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at Task Manager in it right now, and there is one task that seems to be grabbing the lion's share of everything, around 20% CPU and so forth. It's WSAPPX, the Apex Deployment Service, which makes it sound like maybe there was a fumbled Windows update or something that happened to this thing. Stinger, as of this morning, says I'm clean. So does the latest and greatest Avast.
Okay. Yeah, it's not likely to be a an issue with that. Apex, Apex is can make it go as high as 70-80%, maybe even more.
Well, this is obviously it's settled down once I'm in for a while.
Right. Once you're in for a little while, what that does is it's the infrastructure support for deploying applications from the Windows Store. And it starts on demand. So what it does sound like is there something that you tried to install that did not properly uninstall or did not finish installing, or it was a bad download that's now stuck.
I mean, it only happens when this particular user account is signed in. If I sign it out and go to one of the other user accounts, this, everything behaves just fine.
Right. And that's because at some point that particular user attempted to install something locally for themselves, and they either didn't wait for it to finish and shut the machine down, or the thing got screwed up somehow, download, whatever it is.
The end task button's available, but I don't know if it's a good idea to just end the task.
It's not a bad idea in this instance.
If it
keeps coming up, what it means is that it cannot finish that install. And the easiest thing to do is now you're going to have to be a detective. Go into one of the other user IDs and take a look at all the installed apps from the Windows Store.
Yeah, okay.
Write them all down. Now go into this person and look at all those installed apps, and they should mismatch. There should be at least one extra one that's the bad one.
Okay.
And if you then uninstall that, theoretically, you'll be good.
Okay. One thing I've been thinking of is to just copy all of this user's files and settings, in the user folder. To kind of a save directory, blow the user away, and then put it back in again.
Well, you can try that too. Yeah.
I don't know if that would fix it or not. The files are no issue. I get those back from a backup and everything. The issue would be the Thunderbird settings.
Right. And the Thunderbird settings are savable as well.
Yeah, those are accessible. What I might try first is make a fourth user account and log into that account and see if it starts up cleanly.
Okay.
That's something you can try quickly to see where you're at or to see if the problem persists even into that new account that you create.
Right. And then you can always go in and back up your Thunderbird settings.
Yep. And that will get your mail.
Okay. Because each user has their own Thunderbird accounts settings. Are those settings in the registry, or are they in the the application data?
No, the profile is stored separately from all the other Thunderbird program stuff, right? And it's in a profile folder.
Okay.
And basically, it's in your Thunderbird subdirectory. Right, where all your mail and everything else is kept. And it's a random string of digits dot the name of the profile.
Right.
Okay. Okay, so this would be like under users.
Yeah, it would be in the Thunderbird settings. And I'm afraid we got to take a break.
Okay. Well, I think you've given me some ideas of what I can take care of on this.
Great. Thanks. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Hey, good news, Apple people. Give me some, please. Apple has released software updates for all four of its consumer operating systems.
Cool.
iOS, watchOS, tvOS, and macOS to tackle an issue that allowed usage of the Indian Telugu character to cause these devices to crash.
Finally.
The updates are labeled iOS 11.2.6, watchOS 4.2.3, tvOS 11.2.6, and macOS High Sierra 10.13.3 supplemental update. Left elbow, J3.
Command-Shift-3.
Splat 4. And they're all available to download on supported devices. Right now, the update notes for each release include the same key bullet point. Fixes an issue where using certain character sequences could cause apps to crash. Additionally, the iOS 11.2.6 update notes have the following additional change listed. Fixes an issue where some third-party apps could fail to connect to external accessories. A few days ago, people began to realize and spread the word that a certain character specific to the Indian Telugu alphabet could lead to a heap corruption if that character was received in a message, encountered in a document, or pasted into a text field. Some people began trolling by posting the character to Twitter and elsewhere to cause Apple device users to experience app crashes. The updates do not add any new features to any of the platforms and offer no other security updates. The previous updates to these platforms were also bug fixes, but the iOS update added a little more to it. iOS 11.2.5 and macOS 10.13.3 primarily addressed an issue that could cause messages, conversations to temporarily be listed out of order. Now you're sort of time traveling.
That's right.
You know, you get the answer and then you get the question. iOS 11.2.5 additionally expanded support for the recently released Apple HomePod.
Yeah.
And added some Siri features that have been developed for that device. So have you updated? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0400.
You know, I was over at, you know, that big box store where everybody wears the blue polo shirts?
Oh, yeah.
You know the one?
I know the one.
The one with the big yellow tag out front?
I know that best.
You can buy things there.
No way.
It's true.
Unbelievable.
It's true. It's kind of their whole thing. So they had the Apple HomePod out, and I'd been hearing about this thing for weeks and weeks and weeks and said, you know, it's time to go see what's up. And
yeah.
They had it right there on the table, and it was playing a nice selection of music. And it's people ask me, well, what is it? How big is it? And stuff. And I say, it's about the size of a pineapple, minus the top.
Very good.
So I said, if you've ever seen a fairly decent-sized pineapple, that's what it sounds like. And it sounds really good. And this is even in a store where everything is blinking and making noise.
One thing Apple has always done well is sound.
They have. It's true.
One thing Apple has not apparently done well is Siri on the HomePod.
Hmm.
People are not happy.
No?
No. It is far behind Google and Amazon.
Right. Yeah. It defies comparison.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's certainly one good way to put it.
On one end of the spectrum or the other.
And people are very unhappy.
Right.
Because Amazon in particular and Google right after them set the bar awfully high.
It's true.
And Siri is not meeting it.
But, you know, I think it's sort of like, you remember when Apple Maps came out and everybody was ragging on Apple Maps. And,
right.
And it was basically the infrastructure was there, but they just really needed to update the data, the knowledge that it was based on.
Right.
And I think all of the challenges that the HomePod has right now are probably software fixable.
There's no question of that. And Siri itself is software fixable.
Right.
But they have to spend the time and energy to do it.
I think Apple has a good history of putting out very solid hardware and then sometimes catching up to where they really wanted to be when they were deploying the software.
Yeah.
So I suspect that things are going to ramp up quickly.
Oh, I don't doubt that. But right now, Apple is embarrassed, and that's one of the things that will push them to make Siri much better.
Apple has no shortage of things that they should not be proud of.
Yeah.
I could talk for a week about those.
Very subtly put.
No company is perfect, and there will always be challenges, and they'll always be looking a little bit farther than they might be capable of, but they have no doubt that people are very interested in what they're doing.
Well, a large part of it really is, didn't they test the kind of things that Amazon and Google do?
I don't know.
Before they put out the Siri, because people are going to expect those things.
I'm not sure. You know, I remember back in the day when if you wanted to design something and not and engineer it and have it not be based on your competitor, you had to kind of do it in a clean room where the engineers had never seen somebody else's stuff and had to develop themselves.
Nobody cares about that anymore.
I don't know if that's the same way anymore. But you've got to make sure you've got a compelling product to get out into the marketplace if you want to compete.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Rochester, New York. What's up, Joe?
Hey, guys. I just wanted to, about the guy that was trying to save his Thunderbird settings. The best way I found to do it, because I've tried all the extensions and everything, the best way to do it is to actually take that whole Thunderbird folder that's in the user account. I think it's under accessibility. Application data.
Right.
You take the whole Thunderbird folder, not just the profile, the whole folder, and just save it someplace. And then when you recreate the new account, you have to put that folder back in the exact same place. Then you install Thunderbird, and it picks it up like it's a reinstall.
Okay.
Very nice.
Yes, this way you'll get all the extensions, all the user, all the mail, everything will go. But you have to do that for each account. And it's the best way to do it. I've tried a million different ways, and it's the best way to do it.
That's a great tip. Thanks a lot, Joe. We appreciate it.
Good tip.
You got it. Thanks. Bye.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Wow.
That's
it when
nice.
People call up with the...
That's the best part of the show.
That's so great.
It really is.
It's very...
Has been for years.
Yep. Very satisfying.
Yep. Oh, that's nice. That's a nice tip. The big part of that tip for me is put the folder there and then install Thunderbird and it picks it up.
Right.
Very, very nice. Very, very nice. Well done, Joe. Thank you very much. But the Siri thing,
so we have an Alexa at my house and, results have been,
don't say the word because there's 200 of them going off right now.
Cool.
Sorry. I meant Alicia, Alicia, Amanda, Propecia, something like that.
Propecia. Isn't that a hair thing?
Sorry.
I should be the one to know that.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. So Alexa has a mixed review at our house.
Yeah.
Some people like it. Other people don't. My wife is not a fan. She'd be the first person to tell you. She walks around calling it other names that I can't say on the radio. But I've used it we use it primarily for setting timers, for like putting stuff in the oven and you want to come back and grab it before it gets burnt. And what else do we use it for? Setting alarms. We use it for asking when local stores are open until, so when it gets to be 6 or 7 at night, you're like, is this place open till 8 or is it open till 10? I can't remember. Alicia has been very helpful at figuring those things out.
We could also have fun with that, though. Like you say, it's got so many uses.
Right.
We could turn around pledge time, go, hey, Alexis, call Jazz 90.1 and pledge.
Remind me to.
Yes. Well, I've told this story before. Back in the day when Siri first came out.
Yes.
I was teaching at RIT, and class would end, and a whole bunch of students would take out their phones and start up Siri immediately because they want to do something, whatever. And there's always some jerk in the back of the room who'd yell, Siri! Phone mom. And suddenly 15 kids are going, hi, no, mom, everything's fine. I butt dialed you. No, I know I don't call. I know. I'm sorry. I'll call you tonight. I'm in class.
That's right.
Over and over and over again. Hysterically funny.
Cool.
Oh, hysterically funny. And I also told the story of we were at a restaurant one time and there was a waitress whose name was Alexa.
Okay.
And I said, oh, you have to get an Echo. She says, I've got one. My mother hates it because every time she yells at me, the Echo answers.
She's outsourced being yelled at.
She said, so, nice. So now when my mother comes over, I make her argue with me in the kitchen because that's where the Alexa is.
Okay. Takes all the fight out of her.
Takes a win right out of the sale.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Well, we got there was a deal at Christmas.
Uh-huh.
You know, buy three, whatever the deal was. The Deco Dot, yeah.
So they were
super cheap, and then you got a bunch of them. And so we did that. So I've got one. My daughter's got one. My wife has one.
Right.
And I've tried to do that drop-in thing.
Oh, where you can essentially call from one to the other?
Yeah. It seems to only want to drop in on my daughter. If I say drop in on Elaine, suddenly my daughter's going, Dad? Sorry, honey. I'm trying to drop in on your mother. I'm just testing. Clearly it works because I can drop in on my daughter anytime, which she does not appreciate, by the way.
Yeah.
I can't imagine why not. A young woman living by herself in Arizona, and she suddenly doesn't appreciate that I can drop in anytime I want.
Yeah.
So every time I try to drop in on my wife, it gets my daughter and does not get my wife.
Wait a minute. That. Listen to what you just said.
What?
You said it won't work with your wife.
Right.
Right?
Okay.
Gee, maybe you better go to that source and see what she's done to the device.
Well,
you can drop in on her.
But my point really is, if I say drop in on Elaine, how come it hears drop in on Amelia? Or does it just randomly drop in on somebody and they're the only two people I have?
Your wife has changed it.
Maybe she has.
She has sabotaged it.
She's got Google, too. She can figure these things out.
She can figure it out.
She probably figured it out. No, I don't want to talk to him. He's not dropping in on me. Let him go bother our daughter.
No, thanks. Just shut that down.
Yeah.
So where do you define the name of the owner? They all hook it up to their Amazon app?
Right. Okay. So it's in the Amazon account, and it connects to your contact list.
Maybe she's going by a different name.
Maybe that's it. It's possible. Maybe I caught her Tinder profile. I don't know. I don't know what's going on there.
So. Not judging.
Not judging.
Hey.
Never judging. But whatever it is, it just annoys me. But, you know, the
technology annoys you? What?
Yeah.
This doesn't sound like the Nick I know.
Yeah, really. No, you're not paying attention.
His wife is one step ahead of him this time.
That's exactly the truth. But I use both it and the Google Home a lot.
Okay.
Both of them do, you know, very similar things.
Right.
But there are some things that the Amazon Echo does better and some things that the Google Home does better. And trying to remember which one does what. Or, for example, I might be listening to a particular station on Google Home that I cannot get on the Echo.
Right.
And so I'm listening to it, and the phone will ring, and I'll go, Alexa, stop, and nothing happens. Oh, right, it's on the other one.
Yeah, the other one. Right. Alexa, tell the other one to do whatever.
Right. Ooh, anybody listening to this show on an Alexa later in the week is probably just stopped.
Like I say, we could have more fun with this.
Yeah, we could. Yeah.
Alexa, Simon says, purple monkey dishwasher.
Yeah, right. Do you know how they... Now, have you noticed that back in the early... Well, I mean, you may not have had one back in the early days. Back in the early days when they did an Amazon Echo ad...
Yeah.
...that it would trigger the Echo?
I heard about that.
And now it does not.
Oh, interesting.
What they've done is...
They put in some subsonic?
They've removed... all of the oversonics that the human ear can't hear, but Alexa could.
Okay.
So now the Echo is tuned to, if it hears its name but doesn't hear the oversonics, the additional harmonics, it doesn't answer.
Okay.
Very clever. Very, very, very clever.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And given it dog-like hearing, and then said, if you hear this dog whistle at the same time that I'm talking to you, ignore it.
Essentially, same idea.
Ignore me.
Same idea. So it's very clever, which means it's 30 seconds of some sound engineer at the commercials, big deal.
Right.
Yeah.
And now suddenly, You know, I specifically turned off buying stuff through, and a lot of people did. And of course, the whole point behind the Amazon Echo is that people buy stuff from Amazon.
Yeah. Right.
But because the commercial was suddenly ordering pizzas for me.
Right. Or dollhouses.
Or dollhouses or whatever. I turned it off.
Okay.
And that made Amazon very unhappy.
So if you're a privacy person and you're going and visiting people for the holidays, or you're going and doing something else, and you absolutely positively refuse to be recorded by one of these devices wherever you happen to be,
right,
you could put out this ultrasonic dog whistle and
Said, unfortunately what they did was they removed sound frequency. So it's exactly the opposite of adding a dog whistle, which is probably why they did it that way. All right, that music tells me you've wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense, but I know you're a slow learner, and so we're going to give you a chance to do it all over again. We're going to take a slightly longer break this time, but we will be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, the great Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and you continue for no discernible reason to listen to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. This may come as a shock to you, but you are listening to Soundbites right here on the truly great and grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And thank you for joining us as we hurtle headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites. It's Jazz 90.1. It's 5 minutes after the hour. And it's Mark from Greece, New York. Hiya, Mark. What's up?
Hey, Nick. How are you?
Peachy, how are you?
I am well. Two things. One thing is I'm loving the fact that I can now use the Opera browser on my Chromebook.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that nice?
Ooh. I like that. That is really slick, and it gives me a second option. You know, it kind of works like it does on my tablet. It says, you know, how do you want to use it?
Right.
You know, it gives you the choice of using either browser. So I love that. And having those Android apps available to you is really slick. I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, I have to buy a new Chromebook, my old one, which is now, 4 years old? Clearly does not do Android apps. But it still does so much. I can't.
It's hard to justify.
Exactly. I can't justify.
You have to wait for something to break on it, I guess.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, has anybody got a hammer?
Yeah.
I know. Sorry, go ahead, Mark.
It's okay. You know, I mean, it's just a plus. It doesn't make or break it.
Right.
It's just a plus, and it's fun because we've waited so long for this to happen.
Ain't that the truth?
You know. So, and the second thing was going back to the gentleman with the Thunderbird.
Yeah,
I've said it before to you. I don't know if you remember. There's a program called Moz Backup, M-O-Z Backup.
Oh yeah.
And it backs up pretty much anything related to Mozilla. You know, and it's real simple. You turn the program on, and then you do the next button, and it finds your profile. You tell it whether you want to do Thunderbird or you want to do the browser, and it finds your profile. It backs it all up, and then when you're ready, where you backed it up, as long as you have the program installed, it'll let you put it back on through the program.
Right, so it does Firefox, Thunderbird, Sunbird, Flock, SeaMonkey, everything.
SeaMonkey, yep. And I've used it a lot of times, you know, because it's like, I don't want to lose all this mail, and I don't want to have to lose my, you know, bookmarks, and, you know, it lets you bring almost everything with you if you want.
And more importantly, it lets you back them up, right? So you can create a file, stick it on a thumb drive, put it in a drawer.
Yep.
Do that once a week, once a month, whatever. And if your machine dies, you have a fairly recent backup of everything.
Exactly. Now, and you don't have to go searching for that profile folder.
Right, exactly. And, of course, if your machine is crashed, you don't have a profile folder anymore.
Exactly. So I tend to like to use that because it's simple, it's easy. I wish I could schedule a backup with it, but, you know, it's a free program, and it does what it does. So, you know, that's what I do. Every couple of weeks, I back up with that. So I have a fairly current backup of my browser and my email.
Right, right, right.
So, I just thought I'd throw that out there because it's a very simple, easy solution, and anybody can do it because it just finds it for you.
Perfect.
It just needs to know where you want to put it.
Thanks. I've forgotten about it because it is a Windows program. I don't use Windows much anymore.
Exactly, right. Well, you know, if I was better at Linux, maybe I'd figure that stuff out too, but I'm not.
All right, excellent. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks. It's Moz Backup, M-O-Z Backup, all one word.
Nice.
And it will do all of that stuff. It's very, very clever.
It's
very,
always
very
good to have that perfect tool to grab precisely what you need and to do it in a very intuitive and friendly way.
Right. And it's a freeware product. And it's that standard freeware, FOSS kind of, you know, free and open source software.
Right.
Guy had an itch, scratched it, and thought, bet other people got that itch.
Yep.
Let me scratch their itch, too.
That's right.
Very, very clever. Very, very nice. Thanks again, Mark. That was very good. Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
Hi. Good to talk with you.
Good to talk to you.
Listen, I got a old iMac 5G, or G5, I think it is, from my sister-in-law. She's moved on to another iMac.
All right. It's one of the ones with the white plastic on it.
She just wants to junk this. But before I do that, I've been a PC user, and I just thought it might have something nice to have around that could handle, Apple stuff. Of course, it's quite old. I know it's not up to handling modern software, but it's got a gorgeous monitor. You know, the screen is 20 inches, and it's just very nice to look at.
Right.
I'd like to make as much use of it as I can. The problem is it won't connect to my Wi-Fi system because I guess whatever transmitter it has is not compatible with the latest Wi-Fi standards. But I understand you can get something, an adapter, an example of which I think is something called Newer Tech Max Power, something that's called 802, handles 802.11n.
Okay.
Is that something that would work?
Well, here's the thing. You've got to figure out what your goals are, what your budget is, and what your patience level is when you work with older hardware.
Yeah.
And the iMac G5 is, let's see, I think iMac switched from the G series to the Intel series in 2006.
Yeah.
So you're looking at a machine that's already at a minimum 12 years old.
Right.
So I agree, they are beautiful machines. The white plastic is really nice, and the screens are big and beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge is going to be, if you're trying to do much more than play MP3s through iTunes out the speakers, which are nice but not wonderful speakers, the challenges you have going on the modern web, you're going to be limited to a browser called, it's a version of Firefox called 10.4 Fox. There just aren't that many applications and OSs that are designed to work with the Motorola processors that are in there.
Right, because it's not an Intel processor, none of the new software, which seems to only be made for Intel these days, will work.
So it won't work, for instance, with Chrome or with Firefox.
Right.
No, that's correct.
Now, I have, before you junk the thing, I have an alternative.
Okay.
Linux.
Possibly.
There are Ubuntu and Debian both have distributions that work on PowerPC,
okay,
and are certainly more up to date than
macOS
than the macOS 10.4.
Yeah.
Right. So that might be a thing you might think about. Again, you know, whether, and this is, I am assuming, an iMac G5, the all-in-one.
Yep,
that's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
And there's all kinds of stuff on the web If you just Google Linux on iMac G5, you get hundreds of thousands of results.
Is there any way to use it just as a monitor?
Not really. They did. Apple did have that feature. I think it was with a machine that came out 2 or 3 years later that you could do a DisplayPort in order to treat it as an external monitor. But that particular model is too old for that.
That's a shame. It may mean that the next thing for this is the Echo Park.
Well, yeah. That could be a place. I think there are also some local places that will sell used equipment. Yeah. You might make contact with them and see if they're willing to take it off your hands.
Yeah.
Keep it out of the landfill. Or...
Does it have a CD drive that works and all of that stuff?
Yeah.
You can certainly still use it to play music.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I got enough things to play music. It's not really these days.
Yeah.
There are multiple ways to do that.
It's a challenge dealing with vintage hardware. Unless you are a collector and try to preserve that equipment in the era that it was designed for.
And you're also limited to the amount of RAM it probably has.
Yeah, it's probably got 2 or 4 gigs of RAM.
Right.
So, which is, again, enough for Linux, but not really enough for a lot of other stuff.
The big problem is the web browsers.
But my wife won't let me add to my collection anymore.
Yeah, I get it. So, yeah, I'm sorry. I wish I had a better answer for you. I know it's a beautiful, beautiful monitor.
Just to look at it, I have to admit, it's a beautiful piece. It's held up very well. It's not scratched or dinged or anything.
Right. Sorry.
All right. Thanks.
Yep.
If I had a little more room, I'd buy it from you myself and play with it. But I don't.
Yeah, me neither. It's tough.
And I'm in the same boat you are. I bring one home. I've already made room for my 3D printer when it shows up.
Okay.
That's all the room there's left, I've been told.
Yes, this is it?
I've been told.
Yes, I've got the one-in, one-out policy going on. So
I can bring something home
as long as I'm willing to you know, get rid of something else.
The worst part is I've got a stack of old laptops.
Sure. I've got a couple of those.
All of which are like 512 meg of RAM,
mm-hmm.
you know, from the very old days.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot bring myself to take them to the recycling place.
If you went down to your basement or in your attic and they just suddenly weren't there and you know that they'd been dealt with, that'd be fine. But I can't do it myself.
Exactly right. It's exactly right. You're preaching the choir, brother.
Uh-huh.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tim from Webster, New York. Hiya, Tim. What's up?
Yeah, hi, guys. I was hoping you could comment on, you guys were talking about the new Kodak currency a week or two ago.
Yeah.
And I really am kind of green when it comes to the cryptocurrency stuff, but all I want to know is just all three of your opinions and Steve's opinion when he comes back, the more minds on this would be, the better for me. Not as like a financial vehicle of any sort, but more just what you guys feel is this something that is stable that you think I can actually use to for like just like groceries and whatnot in the future, and just buying goods with in exchange for maybe my products or services, and nothing having to do with making money off of it, just using it as a medium of exchange. And if you guys could expand on that, that would be awesome.
Yeah, I'll jump in here. When it comes to figuring out the work that I do and how can I get things by doing it, like food, because I'm not a farmer. I don't grow my own food. So if I need to get my food from somewhere else, I have to have something that the place with the food wants to have. So I always start with, I come at it from a demand side. The people who have what I want, what are they willing to take for it?
Right.
And if I go to my local grocery store, the one with the big W on it, Bitcoin or any of these other coins don't seem to appear at the checkout terminal as something that they accept.
Right.
So for that reason, you know, as they say on the Shark Tank, I'm out. That's kind of a deal breaker for me. If I could buy my gas with it, if I could buy my groceries with it, if I could pay my mortgage with it, if I could do things like that, then, you know, then I'm at least interested. But unless and until it doesn't hold much interest
now,
for me.
That's the thing that when I've done my research and I've tried to find how applicable that is, online, I guess, maybe there's some grocery stores where I could order online. Maybe I could do Amazon gift card to get food or Overstock. And apparently Dell.
But then what? I mean, what,
right.
for, to what end?
In general, cryptocurrency...
What do you mean, though? by that.
Well, what other than just trying it for the sake of trying it, what's in it for you? What's the advantage?
I guess getting outside the Federal Reserve System.
Okay.
Just to have an alternative.
Okay.
I guess. That's about it, really. Just to protest the dollar.
Well, you know, there are lots of other ways to do that, I guess. You could, if you want this to be a thing, I would say start making something of value and only accept the currency that you want to flourish.
Right. Here's the thing with the Federal Reserve and other nations' banking systems. There is at least a verifiable agency behind it that says they back it. You know, we used to be on the gold standard. Now we're on the just trust us standard.
The faith of the federal
government. Right, right. But cryptocurrency is also on the just trust us standard.
True.
So the question becomes, who do you trust?
Yeah, that was a huge thing with me. I have a friend who's involved in this, and the first thing I said to her was, and I'm not to get political at all, but I'm not big on regulation at all, but when it comes to this,
yeah,
it's like, maybe this should be.
Right, right. Okay. Now, hold on. We got to take a quick break,
okay. But
we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, Tim from Webster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we still have Tim from Webster on the line. Still there, Tim? Tim? We do not have Tim.
Lost
all right,
Tim.
But let's talk a little bit more about the cryptocurrencies.
And day-to-day use.
Right. And let's talk about regulation, because Tim touched on that just before the break. Regulation is important. You may not like the federal government, but the federal government does, to a certain extent, back what you've got in, you know, if you're in an FDIC,
sure,
Federal Deposit
Insurance Corporation
bank, your money is guaranteed up to a certain amount. Now, certainly come the apocalypse, that's not going to happen. But come the apocalypse, you're not going to be able to get your cryptocurrency either. So let's just set that extreme argument aside. Nothing angers me more than people who have to go to the extremes in order to make that point. That always tells me your point's not very good.
Yeah.
If that's where you got to go to get it.
All right. So where were we?
So we're talking about regulation.
Okay.
And nobody regulates cryptocurrency. And let's talk about the very first cryptocurrency from a company called Mt. Gox, which was a game company.
Right.
And they started cryptocurrency. People put millions and millions and millions of dollars into Mt. Gox, and then suddenly one day it was gone. Gone. Now, if it was FDIC approved or backed or whatever, people would have gotten some of their money back.
Right.
That did not happen with Mt. Gox. All of that money was gone.
Very
done. Finished.
Speculative, yeah.
And the same has happened over and over again. Google cryptocurrency stolen or robbed or whatever, and you're going to find dozens and dozens of examples of that. Because there is no regulation, and because who is the person starting this thing? I can start a cryptocurrency. I don't know doodly squat about that kind of security. I teach security courses. I still don't know enough to say I can guarantee you your money's not going anywhere. You know, who do you trust is what it comes down to.
You just got to start selling mattresses and people can shove their money in there.
People can shove their money in the mattresses and then they can buy them on President's Day.
That's right.
It's an issue that we have not solved. And we've talked about people wanting to do micropayments, which would have theoretically been backed by the government or somebody.
Okay.
So that they went through and they were guaranteed to go through. You do something like PayPal, and there's and that has, who's behind? Amazon's behind that, I'm pretty sure. Amazon's behind everything that Google isn't.
I thought they were associated with eBay.
Oh, eBay. You're right. No, you're right. It's eBay.
Okay.
But they have a test, a background, which checks to make sure that people actually have that kind of money mm-hmm. and that they can use that kind of money. And, oh, by the way, that money can be taken out of a regular account or sent to a regular account as well. Whereas you cannot do that with cryptocurrency. I can't say I've got four Dogecoins and I'm going to put that 1,700 imaginary dollars into my bank account. You can't do it. No bank is going to take Dogecoins
right.
or Litecoin or Bitcoin or Bitcoin or any one of the variations of cryptocurrency or a Kodak money, whatever they're calling it. Kodak coin with a K. I forgot. Yeah. And so while the idea of cryptocurrency is a good one, and I suspect that in the long run we will see something very like it taking over, that time is not now because there's no authority behind it. And that's...
And right now it's just a commodity.
And it's
primarily.
It's essentially a penny stock.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, if it makes money and you get that money, good for you.
Right.
If it doesn't make money, oh well. If it makes money and you don't get that money, oh well.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't have a lot of recourse.
Right. Right. I've been involved in a number of Kickstarters, mostly I say involved. I've been mostly an investor in those Kickstarters, not making something. And people seem to think it's a store.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you
no.
see a thing on Kickstarter, you pay for it, and you get it. That's not what you're doing.
No, it's more like an IPO.
It's an IPO. You are investing in the company, and in thanks, if they fly, they will send you one of those things. But it's not a marketplace as such, and people don't understand that. Similarly, they don't understand what cryptocurrency is. They think it's a bank, and it is not. It's a speculation.
Right.
It's essentially... it's a flyer into a fairly dubious stock. You know, instead of putting your money in cryptocurrency, I would be happy to come to your house and sell you shares in a uranium mine.
Okay.
Which I actually have, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, my father got caught many years ago.
Okay.
I mean, there's like 5 or 10 shares in a bank vault somewhere. a uranium mine that, believe me, doesn't exist. Or it's like what General Mills did back in the 50s. Yes, I'm old. You could send in X number of box tops and a dime, and you got the deed to 1 square foot of the Yukon.
Okay.
From Sergeant Preston... Of the Yukon.
Of the Yukon, yeah.
Right? Great show. I loved that show. And I sent in my box tops and my dime, and I got a certificate that gave me 1 square foot of the Yukon. Mm-hmm. And I actually taped out a square foot in my bedroom so I'd see exactly how much of the Yukon
space
I owned. It was great.
Almost enough to stand in.
Yeah, here's the problem with that. They sold everybody who sent in a dime the same square foot.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah, they actually owned that square foot, but it's the producers.
Okay.
Essentially.
Yeah, yeah. It was worth more if they failed.
Everybody bought 100% of the same square foot.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so, you know, it was meant to be a gimmick and blah, 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 but somebody caught wind of it and sued General Mills, and they had to spend a decent amount of change. I mean, more than a dime to fix that. And the same thing, I think... You know, we find that cryptocurrency is a flyer. It's a bet. You know, you're putting your money on 00. If you win, you win big. And if you lose, hey, you lost.
Yeah. Yep.
Nobody guarantees the roulette wheel.
And if other people have ideas or thoughts about this, be sure to call in and tell us.
Yeah, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free. 1-800-790-0415. If you own a cryptocurrency... And you're happy with it, let us know.
Right. And tell us what you do with it other than speculate. I mean, are you spending any? Are you making some? How are you deriving or spending this currency? We want to hear about it.
Yeah, right. Somebody was saying the other day, if you would put, for one of these Kickstarters I'm on, if you would put the $99 into one of the cryptocurrencies, you'd have like $7,000 today.
Okay.
Well, yes, until... The
tax
week
time.
Next week when it crashed and you would have lost your $99.
Right. Well, it's like any investment. It's only worth that if you sell it.
And right. And who are you going to sell it to? Nobody's buying cryptocurrency. Hmm. I mean, big amounts of cryptocurrency.
Right.
You know, nobody's buying those. And the people who are mining cryptocurrency, you think, well, this is pretty cool.
Right.
Because I just set up an old computer and let it crank
do its
away.
Thing.
Well, they've already figured out that if you did that 7 years ago, you made a decent amount of money.
Right.
Now, you spend more in electricity than you make in the cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
Cryptocurrency, mining cryptocurrency is now a losing proposition.
Yes. Even for you people on Fairport Electric, you can't quite...
you don't
quite,
make
quite
money.
Do it.
Yes. Right.
I think what we're seeing also is that a lot of places overseas have... I'm hearing stories about places in China that have set up server farms that are doing this. And your goal is to try and compete with them in your bedroom with, you know, half a dozen GPUs. And you're going to try and compete with them.
Right.
Just seems like a losing proposition.
Going back to the topic you were just talking about, though, and, you know, nothing is guaranteed, and, you know, you're going to lose on something.
Yep.
I had an interesting discussion, I'll put it,
okay,
with an individual on their computer. And the hard drive was crashing.
Okay.
And they go, well, you know, how much are you going to charge me to get it back? And I says, well, depends on how long you go. They go, well, if you don't get anything back, then I don't have to pay you, right?
You're confusing effort with results.
I go, run that by me again? Well, if you go ahead and try to get, you know, I give you the hard drive and you go ahead and get, and you can't get anything, since I don't get anything, you know, any data, then I don't have to pay, right? I go, no, it doesn't quite work that way. Well, why? I'm not getting any, you know, I'm not getting, if you can't guarantee I'm going to get my data. I says, right. But you're going to give it to me to at least try. And I don't work for free. Do you work for free?
This is why backups are so cheap.
No. And that's one point I pointed out to him. I says, then where's your backups? Well, I never quite got around to it. I says, well, then evidently you don't listen to sound bites that much.
Yep. Yep.
I says, but to answer your question, no, I don't work for free. If you want to give it to me, I says, I have a diagnostic fee that, you know, I'll try, and the worst you're going to be is out that much. Well, I don't know if I want to spend even that much. I says, well, then you know what?
Okay.
You know my phone number? Give me a call. If you can find anybody else that's willing to do it for free, have at it.
You know, God bless you.
Yeah,
exactly
you,
right.
You got to figure out what your data worth to you.
Right. Getting back to cryptocurrency, Iceland... is now the place to mine cryptocurrency.
Oh, geothermal electricity,
yeah.
Right?
Well, it's geothermal electricity, but there's only 34,000 people on the entire island.
Okay.
And their electricity has tripled.
Oh.
Because of the people who are mining cryptocurrency.
Oh, really?
And even in Iceland, where they have geothermal and yada yada, and it's super cheap, they're finding it's no longer financially feasible to mine cryptocurrency.
Right.
So if you're, I know there are a bunch of students at RIT who have set up 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 machines to do this.
Mm-hmm.
They're not paying for their electricity. RIT is.
Well, yeah, indirectly.
Right. So, right. So
no,
until
they like they get electricity at no additional charge on top
right.
of their tuition, much like your bandwidth. It's.
I didn't hear any of that, Dave.
Lyndon.
Okay. Oh, Lyndon. Our next caller is Lyndon from Henrietta. Hi, Lyndon. What's up?
Hey, that caller who had the old G5 iMac and
yes.
wanted to make it into a monitor.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a program called Screen Recycler.
Okay.
That allows you to share old displays like that on a new Mac. So if he had another Mac, he could then run the software on both ends and use the old Mac as an extension to the new one.
Wow, that's very, very interesting.
Very cool
about that one.
That's been around since the G3 fours and so on, because I used to run it.
Nice, okay. Excellent.
I've heard about tools you can use on your iPad to extend that your screen onto an iPad, but I didn't know about this other one.
Yep. And the other thing is I have a vintage MacBook Pro.
Okay.
And the battery died on it. So I bought a third-party one.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Worst thing I've ever done, because as soon as I put it on in there, the machine became dog slow. It's spending all the time in the kernel, all CPU cycles.
Huh.
And you think that's because you replaced the battery?
Well, I bought a OEM version, and it works fine now.
Okay. Interesting.
Hmm. Well, I know that the legitimate batteries, you have the ability to query them to know how many battery cycles, charges and discharges you've been through. And I wonder if the non-native battery wasn't able to report that effectively and was constantly being queried.
That's a good point. That's a very good thought.
Maybe. All right. Good.
That's a good thought. Thanks, Lyndon.
Sure.
Wow.
Very nice. Now, cool. I will say that there is one nation that is planning its own cryptocurrency, which would then, of course, be backed by the nation.
Okay.
And that's Sweden.
All right.
They're contemplating. I don't think they've come out with it yet, but they're talking about the e-krona.
Okay.
The krona is the Swedish
currency.
Currency.
Yeah.
And they're talking about the e-krona. So we may start to see currency become a real thing.
Right.
And people may speculate on e-krona. But now that becomes just like speculating on the franc. Well, back when there was a franc, speculating on the euro or whatever.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could have a bank account overseas and have a credit card or a debit card that draws on that, and it's stored in euro. But I mean, I guess you got to figure out where you want to be. How far out on that ledge do you want to go?
Exactly. I will admit, I speculated once myself.
Okay.
Back in the 70s, when I lived in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you this when we come back. We're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, before we get back to the phones, I will finish my little story about my speculation.
Yeah.
I was in New York City, living in New York City and acting. I was an actor. And they doubled the price of a subway token.
Okay.
From, this is how old I am, 25 cents to 50 cents.
Okay.
And
there's not a lot of things in life that double in price.
Well, right.
Overnight.
Right. And so what we did was we gambled that they would not change the token.
Ah, okay.
So we pooled our money and bought lots of tokens.
I see the whole caper movie playing in my mind right now.
Exactly right. And we won. They did not change the token. So overnight, we doubled our money.
Right.
But we could as easily have lost our money.
Yeah.
And then we knew that going in.
Right. So did you keep all these tokens for yourself, or did you find people to sell them to?
Well, I sold a lot of them to other people for 45 cents.
Okay.
They saved a nickel. I made 25. I made 20 cents.
Okay.
Everybody won.
Right.
And then we used a lot of them ourselves.
Sure.
Because now our trips
your dollars got stretched.
25 cents. Exactly right. But we made money. We doubled our money. We won. But it was a speculation. And had I lost, there's nobody I can go to and say, I lost my money. Can I get it back?
Right. Right. It's like investing in forever stamps.
Exactly. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Walter from Greece, New York. Hi, Walter. What's up?
Well, Nick, you just took the wind out of my sails because I was going to suggest the exact same thing that I did.
What's that?
I did in Buffalo. They had bus tokens, and they had a price increase. So I just bought them and sold them out to other people and made a little tidy little profit myself.
There you go. And you see, that works. But had you lost the money, had they changed the token, you got nobody to complain to.
Right.
Well, Well, no, here's the issue, though. It was a known service that I could come up with. They didn't care. If they changed the token, that's fine, but I could still use the ones that I had in my pocket.
Nice. Oh, they were grandfathering in the old tokens.
They were that's nice. Trust me, the New York subway system would not have done that.
Well, then the other thing they would have had is they should have done is allowed people to then exchange them face value for whatever,
right.
Or, you know, 2-for-1 or whatever the difference would be. But that would be the correct thing to do because people would be caught in having dead currency.
Yeah, right. The bottom of their pocket.
Right. Well, and you're right. And that's why we gambled that they would not change the token.
Right.
Right. Well, here's the other thing, though. If the person really wants to, remember, you're talking the same time. I think it was the 80s where the big term was arbitrage.
Uh-huh.
You would go ahead and you would speculate that I bought the Canadian dollar, which was worth, say, 60 cents.
Right.
And then the Canadian dollar would eventually rise up to about a dollar. You made some big money then, in conversion over.
Right.
So and it's still legitimate out there. If he wants to sit there and sit at a computer and wait and see just what happens with the Canadian dollar, the euro, any other currency out there, and then change it when it jumps up a penny or two, he can make some big money, but he's going to have to start out with big money in his pocket.
Right. You start out with big money, and you better be at that computer the instant that the price goes up because it's not going to stay up for long.
Right, and that's basically what happens there, that he's looking at the Bitcoin. Because, as you said, you don't know when somebody's going to go ahead and say, I'm going to dump my Bitcoins that I bought, I'll take a loss, and suddenly you're going to have the big loss.
Right, or, more importantly, somebody steals all the Bitcoins, and now you got nothing.
Exactly right.
Yep.
So I mean, there are legitimate ways if you want to go and do it for speculation. But the whole idea is you've got to be able to take what you have and get a service or get a goods that somebody's agreeable to.
Right.
And they were agreeable. The bus company, Subway, were agreeable to a token will give you a ride.
Yep.
Right.
And that's the name of the game.
Right. And that's exactly, that's money in general, right? I'll pretend that the service I'm about to offer you is worth the pieces of paper you're putting on the table.
Yeah.
Right.
The currency is just a storage medium for the work that you've done.
Right.
And the value you've provided.
Right. It's an equivalency. That's all there is, agreed upon equivalency. Thank you.
Right. Thank you, Walter.
Okay.
We appreciate that.
Bye.
And it's true. And the problem becomes, the pretending that we do with cash or credit cards is actually backed up by a real institution.
Right.
A bank.
That's right.
Right? The cryptocurrency is backed up by unicorns and leprechauns.
It's all one big story.
Yeah.
And no matter how much math you do.
Right, right, right. And so if it doesn't work out, it didn't work out. And that's fine because speculation is a legitimate way to spend your money.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that, but you have to understand it's speculation.
That's right. There are risks.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ken from Rochester, New York. What's up, Ken?
Hey, how you doing today?
Peachy, how are you?
Good, thanks. I got a question. I got a Chromebook. I don't call you. I don't listen to your show because I got to work on Thursday. Sorry.
That's okay.
The question I got is, first one, caller said something about browser. Where is it on your machine?
The browser is the thing that lets you get to the internet. So on your Chromebook, that's Google Chrome. And generally speaking, when you turn on your Chromebook, that's that big window that's in the middle of the screen.
Oh, okay. Now, I heard browser. I didn't know where it was. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. If you've never heard the term, you can't be expected to know what it means.
You called the right place.
I wasn't trying to be rude on that.
No,
you're not at all.
Not a problem.
Learning is good.
Yeah. Another question is, I got a Chromebook, and if you're trying to put it on a copy machine, and it's my brother's, how can you get in it? Because we tried different numbers on the Chromebook to get on a copy machine. It won't go through.
So you mean to do printing?
To print, yes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. It depends. This is a longer deal. Here's the thing. There are two ways that you can connect to a printing device, whether it's a copier or a printer or whatever.
Okay.
One is called Google Cloud Print, and the other is called a print server.
Okay.
Now, if your copier is new enough, it may have a Google Cloud Print server built in.
Okay.
And that you'd have to read the manual to find out if it does. And then that'll tell you everything, exactly how to turn it on, how to set it up, how to connect to it, everything.
Now, do you have to get a Chromebook that would have a copy machine at it, or same computer? Like
no. That thing I'm talking about, the Google Print server, the Google Cloud Print, is on the copier itself and will connect to any Chromebook.
Okay.
Now, the other way you do it is if that particular copier will accept print from any device, which makes it a print server.
Okay.
To network printer. Is the copier on your network so you can print to it from another computer?
Yeah, it says printer right on it, and now this copy machine is HP.
Okay.
Now we tried to do it. My brother and I tried to do it, and it would not go through at all.
Right.
We hit printer and see if it went through. It would not go through at all.
Okay. How new is your Chromebook?
Mine's a couple years old.
Okay.
It's not that old.
Well, it's older than it needs to be for this. There's an easy solution called HP Print for Chrome app, but then you have to be able to use Chrome apps. And in fact, you should be able to download that from the web store. You know that your Chromebook has something called the web store.
Okay.
If you go into there in the lower left corner, there's that little circle.
Okay.
And if you click on it, you see a few applications.
Okay.
And if you use the up arrow that's at the bottom there,
yep,
you can see a lot more applications. If you search through all those applications, you'll find one called Web Store.
Okay.
And if you open up the Web Store and do a search for HP Print for Chrome, you can install that, and that will let you connect to an HP device over your network.
Okay.
So download that, read the instructions, and it should tell you how to do all the pieces and parts. And there's a little link to the actual documentation from HP themselves on how to do that.
Okay. Okay.
And then you'll be able to type Control P, and it'll come up as one of your printers. And of course, if it's your only printer, it'll come up as your only printer. And
right.
And then you can print to it, and you're on your way.
Right, because we had, like I said, we had trouble doing it, and we could not get on it at all.
Right. Well, this should help, and it should make it easy to do.
Okay. If I have any questions, if I
you know where we are,
day off, I'll give you a call and see if you can help me again.
Perfect. Thanks.
Okay.
All right,
thank
thanks.
You. Bye-bye.
Yep. Well, that music tells me that we are done for another week. I have to say, this week went fast.
Oh, I think so, too.
I think so, too. Well, time
fun.
Flies when you're having fun.
That's right.
This wasn't fun, but the time flew, and that's the important part right there. I definitely want to thank Dave Enright, but I particularly want to thank Dennis Worcester.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
Who was kind enough to come in, as Steve is one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Southwest. And we always love having Dennis here. And we will be back next week with Soundbites. Don't go away. George is here. But we'll be back with a whole lot more Soundbites in just 166 hours. Until then, try to be kind to each other, will you?